Hey friends, Devin again for another episode of the Bardic Babble podcast, the show where we talk to creatives about the things that they create. On today's episode, we're doing things a little bit differently. We're joined by Jeff Stormer, the host of the Party of One podcast. This is a podcast that uses condensed tabletop RPG rule sets to have a one-on-one tabletop experience. That means a DM and one player. So half of this episode is us interviewing Jeff about the project, the processes, and himself. And then the later half of the episode is us diving into Big Fight Feel, a tabletop rule set that Jeff created. I had a really great time. It does get a little off the tracks from the interviews that we experienced, but I think you'll enjoy it. And as always, be sure to head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher, and leave us a rating and review, subscribe to the show, follow the show, whatever it allows you to do. Again, the more people that we have engaging with this stuff on the podcatchers, the further out it goes to other audience members. Other than that, we're going to take a quick ad break, and then we're going to just dive right in with Jeff and the Party of One podcast. Welcome back, listeners. Today, I am joined by Jeff Stormer of the Party of One podcast. Jeff, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. I am squarely in the space of okay is where I would put myself today.
You know what? It's better in okay than in bad.
Fair. That is a fair point.
I'm very, very happy we were finally able to peg this down.
It took a little bit of work, but we got there. We made it.
We finally made it. All right, so I just kind of want to just dive right into it because we might have a run-through of an RP here at the end of the episode. So what is Party of One? What do you do?
Party of One is an actual play podcast focused on two-player role-playing experiences. Every week I sit down with a friend. We play a different two-player role-playing game. We share some laughs, maybe once in a while a few tears, and we have a really good time. And we play a lot of games and settings and styles and genres and sorts of play that are oftentimes less embraced or like less common in role playing, or at least in sort of the actual play scene. So we tell some really like fun and interesting stories.
Awesome. Okay. A lot to unpack in that. So let's just go ahead and start at the top. Why did you decide to create content with one-on-one experiences rather than a full table?
It was easier to schedule is the short answer. There are longer answers, but the short answer is I realized I could try and schedule recordings with five people, or I could try and schedule recordings with one person, and it took a lot less energy to do that. The longer answer is I had been interested in two-player games for several years. When I had moved to Philadelphia with my then partner, now wife, producer of the show, Jen Frank, we had moved in together and we were like looking, and like I had just left a game group and I was looking to like fill that space. And Jen had suggested, hey, why don't you look into games that are made for two people as opposed to like games that are made that we could play together? So I started looking into them, and this was 2011. So there very much wasn't really things that fit that niche. So I started kind of researching that, and I'd been doing some research on that for a few years when a friend of mine was like, hey, do you want to put together a podcast for a network that I'm putting together? And I said, yeah, I've got this pitch. It's about two-player role-playing games. And he said, great, we'll have it on the network. And then that network never really came to be. So I was left with this idea, and I said, well, I've been researching this for years. I could just make this. I could just make this for me. And that's when the magic happened. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, and it's a very strong and rich history, from my understanding. You're up to 200 episodes? Over 200 episodes?
250 next week, I think.
God damn.
I think this week might be 249. Next week might be 250. At the end of October, which is October 26th, it will be 5 years. That's the fifth anniversary.
That's incredible.
It is. I feel it. I, you know, you're as young as you feel. And in terms of podcasting, I feel ancient.
And that's you're on a weekly schedule.
Yes, indeed. New game, new guest every week.
New game every week, even.
Yes.
So how do you go about finding rules for your sessions that can be condensed into a one shot with one party?
Well, the nice thing is that, like, we've been very lucky in the last several years. In the last few years, we've been very lucky in that a lot of designers have been reaching out to us with, like, a note of, like, hey, I wrote a game for two people. Do you want to play it on the show? So we're very lucky in that regard. That's the ease. That is my favorite because it's the easiest. It's when I have to do the least work.
Right.
The other really nice thing is where tabletop gaming is at this point. Like, we've really, like, the indie space has exploded with itch.io and game jams, and a lot of related things have made it that there is just, like, a huge influx of interesting, cool, fun, like, indie role-playing games that means that, like, I ran the numbers, and according to, like, most of the lists of, like, two-player role-playing games, which are games, like, for two people specifically, there is something like, I want to say a couple hundred, maybe 300 on itch.io at this moment. So enough that, like, I will reasonably not play them all in the length of the show. And let me,
incredible.
There's a chance this show goes on for 15 years and I get to all of them, but I can't promise that in that time, 300 more games don't come out.
Right, exactly. And then you have a different guest on every episode. How do you go to... Do you just reach out to the individuals? They sound interesting. Connect on social.
Yeah, that's pretty much as easy, as straightforward as it gets. Is, I mean, I've always said this show is a thinly veiled excuse for me to make new friends. So there is a fairly regular occurrence that, like, if I am interacting with someone and, like, at a certain point I am like, oh, I would like to do something special with this person, I send them a message of like, hey, I have this podcast, and, you know, it is it's a special thing. So a lot of it is I will ping a guest on social, and similar to, like, designers sending me games, is a lot of people will reach out and say, hey, I would like to play a game on the show. Oftentimes it is I am promoting a Kickstarter or a podcast or a project, and they'll reach out, which means that I have, like, a nice backlog. At any given point, we have, I want to say, a 2 to 3 month backlog. It's historically been about 2 months, but now that I got nothing to do and nowhere to go with my time, it tends to be about 3 to 4 months of, like, guests locked down at any time, which is, like, a strong mixture of people who have reached out and people who I have reached out to. And, you know, there are specific reasons and kind of logistics that go into both, but that's sort of the answer. Is sometimes people will ping me, other times I will ping people, and we'll collectively find time to record and make something special happen.
That's awesome. So one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on was just recently on Twitter, I saw a couple parties had mentioned your name when it comes to kickstarting, and they noticed that a couple members of their new community in Kickstarter had found out about their project from your show. And it's just one of those things that kind of happens around podcasts or just content creation in general. It's just community building. And I guess
my specialty. It's my favorite part. It's my favorite part of doing this.
Is talking to people?
Is making community, making friends. It all ties into the core idea that I want to make new friends, and all of it echoes out from there. And I've spent the last 5 years building what I would describe as a very Rube Goldberg machine-esque apparatus that allows me to make new friends on a regular basis, is really the best way to describe what Party of One actually is.
Well, without getting too far into the machinations of it, can you just kind of walk us through, you know, you wake up in the morning, you put out a Twitter post, you, like, just the life cradle to grave for one episode. You want to walk us through?
Yeah. So we start, the process begins. That's a great question. The process begins probably about, I would say, a process begins about 3 to 4 months in advance. Like, we tend to, I either will tweet at someone, like shoot someone a DM if there's somebody that I've been talking to for a while, or somebody will shoot me an email. And the best case scenario is this is happening about 3 months out, right? Like, this is, you know, either I'll reach out and just say, hey, I want to record a podcast with you. Like, whenever you've got some time, let's make something happen. Or somebody will ping me and say, hey, We're recording this in September. So, hey, in January, I am launching a Kickstarter. Do you have a spot on your schedule? I will say yes, absolutely. I have, at which point I will send them over some documentation that I have. I've put together like a really nice form that I have, like, kind of collects all of the basic fundamental questions on. So what game do you want to play? What are your safety guidelines, your lines and veils? Do you have any questions about the recording process? And what days are you free to record? All of those kinds of things. Like, I break that down on just like a form, because that saves me four different conversations. Like, that causes a back and forth of four emails into one form submission. And then the other thing that I will send them is a packet, just a PDF of like, here's some FAQs about the show. Here's what I need from you, which is a headphone, microphone, and a recording software. Here's the general flow of an episode. Here's a few links that you can listen to for like reference. Just kind of gives them everything they need to know to be like, when we sit down on mic, they know what to expect. This is, again, like, this is broken. This is also the end result of, I have taken 15 conversations that I have had at this point 250 times and boiled it down into a 2-page PDF that I can hand somebody and go, here, now we don't need to discuss this because you have the information. And we'll still discuss it if they want, but like, the whole, at this point, I've learned that for me, like, the key to what makes Party of One really work, especially because it is a show that is like emotionally heavy sometimes, and to make that work as well as I can is all about just like making sure that the guest has everything they can possibly have to be as comfortable as possible, so that like once we hit record, there's no questions, there's no uncertainty, they know what to expect, they know what's going to happen, they know the feel of it, they know the tone of it, and like they are just ready to like sit back, relax, and play a game. So we get all of that locked down. That usually takes like about 2 to 3 weeks of fill out the form. Here's the packet. Send me an email. Let me know what times. Does this time work for you? How about this time instead? Blah, et cetera. We do the podcast scheduling dance, and then we finally like sit down and record. That's the easy part. That's the easiest part of my job. Then they leave. I pay them. Then like, we sit on that audio for 2 months is like the shortest and easiest way to describe it, is like we have a backlog, and the nice thing about it is that we can kind of put their audio wherever we want it in the process. So if somebody comes to us, if we're in talks and we're like, hey, when does this work for you? And they're like, actually, we're not launching the Kickstarter for 6 months. I can hold on to that audio for 6 months. Like, there's nothing stopping me from doing that. So we'll hold on to it. Once we reach the point that the guest and I have agreed, like, is the right moment to release the episode, we'll edit it. Either myself or Jen Frank will edit it. We have an alternating one-for-one-week schedule, which, as a side note, is one of the things that I really love about the show. I know that you said you didn't want to get too deep into it, but we're getting real deep into it.
Let's go. Let's go. I got my splunking gear.
The thing that I really like about established this really nice editing rhythm, and it's one of the things that I like about the show that a lot of people wouldn't notice because it's sort of happening under the hood, so to speak, is Jen and I have very different ideas of the episodes that we like the episodes that, like, if we were in a vacuum and this was not a podcast we were producing, we would listen to. And so Jen loves lighthearted, fun, silly, like big, bright, bold, exciting, like fun episodes. And meanwhile, I like sadness and being sad. Those are my things that I enjoy. So it creates a nice rhythm because we're alternating every week just as a like way of splitting the work. But it means that because I have like a calendar and like 3 months of episodes, I can go, all right, I've got 5 really fun episodes and 5 really like heavy dramatic episodes. I can make sure that the weeks kind of alternate and be like, here are the fun episodes, here are the light ones, which from a listener perspective, I've come to realize over the years means that if an episode comes up and you are not interested in the dramatic heavy stuff, you can be reasonably comfortable that next episode is going to be something lighter and more upbeat just by the way that we've sort of built the editing workflow. It's a tiny piece of the puzzle that I'm really proud of.
Sure. No, I get it.
When the system works, it works magic.
There you go.
So yeah, we put it into the editing flow. Once it's in place, we get it edited. We generally do that the weekend before we release the episode proper. And then finally on the day of release, after work, because I have a day job and I no longer work on podcast episodes during work because I enjoy my job now. I will, like, on the day of release, I will record intro, outro, mix it all together, and then send it out in the world. And that is sort of the nitty gritty of, like, how an idea goes from, hey, I want to do this podcast, to here I am tweeting out this week on Party of One, so-and-so joins me to play this game. There is your detailed nitty gritty timeline for how it all, that is, I have walked you through the sausage factory that is Party of One.
Well, again, just a lot to unpackage top to bottom there. I guess the big one that kind of sticks out to me is, did you ask your partner, Jen, to come on and join you on the show with editing and everything?
So it was actually like a really funny kind of moment of synchronicity where Jen and I, we had been producing the show for probably 4, 5, 6 months. Like, it was early in the show's run, but like late enough that like it had kind of had a developed workflow to it. And Jen, just, we were talking about it, and like she was like, is there anything else I could be doing? Cause I would like to be doing more. I want to have more of an active role in things. And at this point I had been editing everything. Every single moment of audio like was going through, and it was something I was working on every single day, like between, like before bed, like during work hours, which sounds bad, but also I hated my job and I stand by it. And now I'm in a job that I like and I don't do that anymore. Case anybody was wondering. Yeah. So like it was something that like editing audio was just what I was doing with my time. So I was just like, literally, I just was like, hey, do you want to like learn to edit audio? Because this is something that like I knew how to edit audio because I took a class on audio editing in college. So like I knew this, like the workflows of it. And I was like, hey, like, would you be interested in learning how to edit? And she was like, honestly, that sounds like the greatest possible thing for me to do. And she was so absolutely excited that like I sat down with her, and I will always remember I gave her like an episode clip, and I was like, I showed her like, here's how you cut audio. Here's how you adjust the levels. Like, here's how you do the little pieces. Now, like, show me what you would do with this audio. And she handed it to me, and it was this moment of like, she hands it back to me and I listened to it, and I didn't really know how to process. This is better edited than I would have edited. Like, you have done things with this audio that like I would not have thought to do, and the audio is better as a result. Like, and she just literally, I remember the conversation where it's just like, yeah, so there was a pause here, and I realized if we just cut this pause, like it's clearly the guest thinking of what to say next. So if you cut this pause and bridge them together, it's going to create a cohesive thought that's going to sound like they're just hitting this one joke. And I was like, fuck, that's perfect. I forgot to ask if I can swear.
Yes.
Frick,
yes. No,
that's really good. Perfect. So I was like, holy crap, that's perfect. Like, that is a, and so like immediately I was like, well, here's a whole episode, like take it, run with it. And she sat down with it and edited it. And, you know, like since then, like it was almost immediately like a process of, all right, let's do this. Like, let's make this a formal part of the process, because you are super good at editing, and I'm really happy to like have someone to take that slack, to like pick that part of the process up. And honestly, it was probably for the best for the show, because now it is much more of a, to what I was saying about like the workflow and like the thought behind it earlier, like we have a lot more active conversations about like what episodes are coming up, like what games are we playing, like what types of stories are we playing, you know, when we talk through like, hey, like, sounds like we should probably do something like this, like in the coming weeks, like, why don't you talk to so-and-so? And so we've featured a lot more stuff, a lot more variety of things, because it turned into something where like it became much more of a shared thing. And I think it was for the better of the show, because I think like if it was still like a thing where I was editing everything, I don't think I would still be doing it.
That's fair. Burnout can hit pretty quickly, especially when you're managing it all on your own. But that's awesome. I'm I'm happy for you guys that you came to a happy medium, and it improved the show. It's
It genuinely, I think, has made the show better. I think that, like, and especially because, like, she's, like I said, she's great at editing audio, and she's great at editing, like, comedy, which is, like, a skill in and of itself. Like, she's very good at, like, knowing, and she and I just have different, like, takes on, like, things to cut. So, like, it forces both of us to kind of step back and go, okay, why would Jeff cut this, or would Jen cut this? And for me, like, it has literally, sometimes I've been like, you know what? I don't think it matters that much. I don't think it matters that much if this little bit of, like, tech chatter gets in. I don't think it's going to break anyone's immersion.
Okay. So now, just staying on the topic of audio editing, you actually just released your personal audio editing flow to the Twitterverse. What prompted you putting that out there?
So there's actually a really funny story that I put this together a few years ago, and it's been kind of a living document that I've been working on ever since. I was having a conversation with some other podcaster friends, and one of them mentioned, like, offhandedly, like, I would love to see some people's workflow. Like, they were just like, I'd love to see some people's process, because I feel like there's probably steps that I'm missing. And again, I was bored at work, and so I said, I could put that together. And I put it together, and it was, like, right when I was, like, starting to teach and, like, the tricks and the things that I was doing. So I was like, oh, I'm going to put that together. I'm going to share it with Jen. I'm going to share it with my friends. So I put together just as a Google Doc, and I very consciously put it together as, like, hey, here's what I'm doing right now. Like, here's what I'm doing step by step by step by step. Like, here's the individual steps. Here are here are the audio effects that I'm adding in, and here's, like, what they're doing in Audacity. And I put that together, and I shared it with Jen, and I shared it with my podcaster friends. We were all in a group chat, so I just posted it in the chat, and I was like, here's my process. If I change my process, I'm going to change this document. I'm going to go in and add a step and say, like, now I'm doing this because I learned this was a thing. And eventually I had been doing this, and I shared it with my friends. I shared it with Jen. And eventually I just realized, like, I had other people ask about it because my friends had shared it with people. And I was like, oh yeah, I could just tweet it. I could just send it out in the world, because I think as people working on things, as creatives, and I think especially as, like, independent creatives, I think we don't do that enough. I feel pretty strongly that, like, we don't, or rather, like, people in general, creatives in general, don't share their processes enough. And I think, like, it is important to me to put that out in the world, because, like, if I were just when I was just starting out, I didn't have that. And if I can do something where 5 years ago, Jeff could look at something and go, oh, wow, this is really valuable, then I think it's fair to do that, because there's probably somebody in exactly the same position as Jeff was in 5 years ago. Like, there's probably somebody looking at that document. And the nice thing, the really satisfying thing, is I've had people reach out and say, oh yeah, I'm just starting out, and this is, like, a really helpful guide of, like, what to do. Thank you. Like, and so, like, it's my way of, like, helping to lift people up who are in the position that I was in, because we're kind of, a lot of us are kind of figuring this out on the fly. And I think the more we can do to level that playing field, the better it is for everyone.
Yeah. And that's, I'll make sure to link that tweet and that document in the show notes. But again, it just goes back to a theme that I'm finding in my show, is a lot of my guests believe in the rising tide makes all ships float. And, you know, this document just goes to, again, reinforce that. When you get up into, you know, the multi-million dollar production houses and stuff like that, they like to keep a lot of that hidden and under the hood, or reserved for a blog post to generate engagement. So it's awesome. I myself went through, reviewed your doc, and went, oh yeah, I should probably change the way that, you know, I do my compression. And, you know, sure enough, it helped to improve the audio on my own show.
Yeah. I mean, like, and the truth is, that document is a thousand times I had that realization where somebody in conversation with somebody just went, oh yeah, for a podcast, I run everything through Levelator. And I went, the hell is Levelator? So I Googled Levelator and was like, what the crap? Oh my God. And then I downloaded it and I started running everything through Levelator. And then I had somebody, I was talking about like back running noise reduction on background noise. And somebody said, oh yeah, you probably don't want to do that because it's sort of like a shotgun approach. Like it's going to like, if you're trying to get rid of a persistent background noise, a noise gate is going to be a more effective way to eliminate that audio. And I went, I don't know what a noise gate is. Hold it. Oh my God. Add that to the checklist. Noise gate. Tab. Here's what this does and why you need it. Cool. So the next time I sat down, I looked at the list and went, noise gate. That's why I need it. All right. And so it's just been, it is that, like, the list, the checklist, and this is true of a lot of, like, my process docs and things that I've learned, is there are a lot of realizations of, oh, man, I've been doing this wrong. Here's a better way to do it. Hey, everybody, here's a better way to do this. And then it turns out, and then everybody benefits. Like, it is very much a rising tide situation of, like, if, like, the more tools that we all have and the more openly we share them, the more people are going to go, oh, cool. I didn't know you could do that.
Right. And then it starts that giant wheel of, and then somebody down the line is going to go, oh, well, let's improve this process even further and create Levelator 2 or...
Exactly. Or somebody's going to go, hey, you're using Levelator, but actually if you do this, like you'll get the same process, but it won't, but like easier. And then I'll go, oh, cool. Delete the line about Levelator, add in Levelator 2. Like it's all about that kind of iteration of we're all kind of standing on each other's shoulders and collectively sort of, I guess forming some sort of wheel situation. And then we're moving through sort of a people wheel is the best way to describe it.
I think you just created somebody's new one page, one shot people wheel.
Done it. Got it. Copyright Jeff Stormer. You have to pay me for that idea. Got it. And that's where we make the money. That's where we get them.
That's it right there. So now just kind of, round us out on the nitty gritty. What is your favorite aspect of just this whole project, top to bottom?
It is genuinely a very small part of it, but it's something that A, I'm very good at, and B, brings me a tremendous amount of joy. I will openly brag about this because the proof is in the pudding. I am exceptionally good. And if you give me a very specific set of criteria, you say, my dream game would be this, and you give me a couple days, I will come to you and say, here is a game that captures exactly what you want in the way that you didn't even realize you wanted. And that, there's a moment where I can send someone a DM and say, hey, I found the game that I think we should play on the show. And there's a moment where they will look at that DM, they will look at that game, and I will get back an excited scream in my DMs. That is my absolute favorite part of recording. It is my favorite part. My favorite thing is to go, hey, here's something that I think is you, that like makes me think of you. Here is something that I think you would enjoy. And to have somebody go, yes, Jeff, you are absolutely correct. This is incredibly exciting to me. That is my favorite thing. Like just being able to say, here is your party of one game. Like, here's the game that I think is exactly what you want. And then we play it and we have a lot of fun.
That's awesome. You must be the captain of the Christmas gift brigade.
I'm literally wearing a Christmas sweater right now. I'm pretty into it. I'm into the gift giving. Pretty great. Love it. Well, here for it.
That's awesome. It takes a very certain kind of person to continually week after week after week create content. And then it takes a totally different type of person, not only to find time to produce the show, but to tune it to each guest. That's hats off to you. That's incredible.
That's my favorite. It's my favorite part of doing the thing.
So now we're looking at about 30 minutes in the record time. And I'm personally one of the types where the best example is to do. So
yes, indeed.
Do you want to just like, I'll hand off the steering wheel and the guests can listen to a quick condensed version of Party of One?
Yeah, let's do it.
Fantastic.
So I have just shared with you a game that I wrote. It is one of my favorite games that I've written. It is called Big Fight Feel. It is an RPG of marquee matches and longtime rivalries. A side note about this game, and I think about like if you're looking at the PDF of the game, this is a very good example of like a rising tide lifts all ships, because like I laid this out And I laid this out because, like, a friend of mine, D. Pennyway, tweeted out, like, a Twitter thread of, hey, here's how you can make really professional-looking layouts in Google Docs. And, like, I've been making games in Google Docs for years and, like, read the Twitter thread and went, oh, crap, I can do that. So, like, I can, like, and, like, it maybe doesn't look as good as it would if I, like, paid somebody money, like, you know, pay professionals to do professional-level things, but, like, I think it's a pretty good looking document, and it ties in the idea that, like, now my games are better. Like, in terms of if we take the sentiment as truth that, like, layout design, the visual aspect of a game is part of what makes it appealing, my games have gotten better because, like, I am now better at being able to, like, make them look a way that evokes something. And like that, I couldn't do that until somebody who, I mean, and, you know, D is literally like a professional layout artist. Like, they do this for money, but they were like, here's what I do. Like, here's a process that I do that, like, you can take and run with it. And by sharing out, like, their expertise, it made my work better. And by making my work better, like, it elevates everything. And so, like, it's just very true to the spirit of a rising tide in terms of, like, share out the stuff that you're really good at, because it's going to make other people, it's going to catch and land with other people, and it's going to make their work better. And if we're all making each other's work better, all of our work is going to get great.
Agreed. 100%. This looks awesome. I really like the colors.
Thank you. I love it. I'm really proud of the layout of this. This was partially done as an experiment to see if I could make a professional looking thing in Google Docs. And I think I'm pretty proud of it.
And then, is it all right with you if I link this in the show notes as well?
Yeah, I have actually a link to buy it, so I will give you the proper link in the show notes.
Perfect.
And then with that, let's go ahead and get into the game. I will read through, like, the preview text, and then that'll tell us what we're doing and how we're going to play. At last, it has come down to this. Two wrestlers in the middle of the ring, the referee rings the bell. For a moment, the crowd goes silent as the two competitors face each other, taking in the moment. Tonight, your rivalry ends. All of the history, the heartbreak, and the hatred comes to a head right now. There will be blood, there will be violence, and at the end of this, there will be a winner and a loser. But before then, there is silence. This is an RPG for two players. Together, we will capture a moment in time, exploring the history and tension in the air at the start of a legendary fight between longtime rivals. One of us will play the face, the hero, the beloved, the technico. The crowd loves you. They shower you in cheers when you enter the ring. They want nothing more than to see you win. The other will play the heel. The crowd, the villain, the monster, the Rudo. The crowd despises you. Booze and trash rain down on you as you enter. If you win tonight, there might well be a goddamn riot in the streets. So basically what is going to happen is we are going to take turns answering, asking each other and asking a series of questions in any order. There are 16 questions marked as either the face or the heel. Questions are grouped together by they are somewhat related. So if you're looking at the list, like question 4 and 5 are interconnected, but we don't have to answer question 4. Before 5, if we want to go out of order. Then once we've answered those 16 questions, we have 3 questions that we will answer after that, but also in any order. Optionally, I have a deck here of Sasha Renault's Spindle Wheel cards, which are a deck of tarot-like storytelling cards. That's just a way that, like, if we are at a point and we're not quite sure where we want to go with the story, we can pull a card and sort of draw from it to help us get an idea of where what to inject into the story. So the first question, the important question is, would you like to be the face or the heel?
You know what? I'll take the heel on this one.
Okay. I think I was the heel last time I played. So that feels right. Okay. So we will, would you like to answer the first question or the second?
I'll go second.
Okay. I will answer a question. I'm going to answer question 3, which is for the face. Why is tonight the only night this match can happen? I would like to pull a card just to get an idea for this. I have flipped the Fool, closed-minded and stubborn, faith born out of spite, or wide-eyed and open-hearted, unfettered by cynicism or context. I think that this is the only night that this can happen because through no fault of anyone's. Like, I don't think that, like, I think my contract is ending. I don't think that I'm quitting, but I think, like, after tonight, my contract has ended. I think that, like, I am leaving the promotion. I'm leaving on good terms. Like, they just, like, for whatever reason, we'll kind of flesh out why, but, like, after tonight, like, I am done in this promotion. Like, I am not present anymore. And so this is very much, like, my goodbye match, and the one thing that has to happen before I kind of have my goodbye is that you and I have to face in the middle of the ring. So which question would you like to answer?
I'm going to take 4, and it is, what does that face have that you want more than anything? And I'm feeling it's the charisma. I'm a great fighter. I've always been able to hold my own and have a great record behind me. But I've never been able to just step into that light, be the fan favorite. And I always attribute it to the face's good looks, their ability to swoon the crowd and just really get them going. And it's just something that I personally have never been able to do. I can get in, I can fight, but I just can't carry the momentum outside the ring.
I love that. I love that a whole lot. I'm gonna follow that up with question 15, which is, what does the heel have that I want more than anything? I've also pulled a card, and it says on it, a pilgrim, a wanderer bearing only a suitcase, a story, and a smile. I think that I need the crowd. I think that, like, I have a charisma, but the thing that has always held me back is that, like, I have to play to the crowd. I think that, like, I envy that very same ability to, like, come in, do the thing, wrestle the match, and leave. I've never been able to kind of, like, separate myself from, like, putting on a show for the audience. And I kind of wish that I could do that. I wish that, like, it's probably, which as I'm saying, it probably makes tonight a lot worse, because, like, I am so tied to how the crowd perceives me that, like, I am walking away from that. This is not a question on the sheet, but I want to ask you, do you think the crowd knows that I'm leaving?
I was actually going to ask you the very same thing. I think for publicity's sake, a goodbye match, a midnight match would be kind of a spectacular.
I think you're right. I think that which tells me a little bit more about, like, why I'm leaving. If they are advertising it, then they must know that I'm not coming back, which means that I either got a contract somewhere or I'm retired. This is not a, you know, so-and-so leaves town and they might lose. Like, if this is properly, like, we're giving you a goodbye, then the crowd knows that, like, the crowd is sitting down and kind of knows that I'm walking away here, which feels very final. And I think I want to lean into that idea that whether due to injury or I'm shifting life circumstances, I think I actually like it being, like, life stuff, like, not related. Like, I'm not so hurt that I have to retire. I'm just retiring now because it's the right moment, and the crowd sort of knows that, and this is sort of recognized as my good. So what question do you want to answer next?
I'm actually going to follow up with 16. What are you willing to do tonight to protect what you have? I think we've gone back and forth a few years now. We've kind of tied each other to the top of the rankings. We've had a couple of big grandiose matches, but letting you go out on a big, spectacular, there's cameras, there's lights, people in suits, you ending on a good note doesn't appeal to me. I have worked every day. I have struggled and climbed. I've printed my own posters. I've gone to interviews. So letting you end a career that I, the heel, feel has kind of been glitzed and glamored and sped along to, you know, the penthouse, that's not high on my priorities. So as we're sitting in the locker room and everybody's coaches are prepping them, I kind of step off into a corner and I don't know how dark I want to go with this. I take something that is illicit within the wrestling scene that kind of gives me an edge, whatever blank anybody wants to fill in with that.
Sure. I got that. Then I immediately want to go for question 11, which is what is the heel's hidden weakness? I think that, like, you care more than you let on. And I think, like, you have put more of yourself into both your career and the promotion that we're wrestling for. Like, you've put more of yourself into that than you are willing to make public. And that is something that can be manipulated. Like, you know, your presence as the wanderer, right? Your presence as sort of the unattached, the sort of no strings tying you down, like that can be exploited. There's a passion that runs under the surface with you that can be drawn out, and it's very it kind of gives me a Spider-Man villain feel, for lack of a better way to put it. Like, you can be made to make a mistake by way of like getting you so angry and invested and like making you care so much that you are forced to you go too hard too fast. Like, you stop thinking because, like, you know, you're so focused on taking it seriously, and you've given so much, and you've printed your own posters, and you've done all these things, that you can be somewhat manipulated once the match is underway because of that.
All right. I'm loving this.
The vibe I get is Spider-Man, you know, luring the rhino into running into a wall because the rhino has to run it.
Thing. Totally. All right. So I'm going to go for number 14 here. What is significant about the venue where the fight is happening? So I'm just going to kind of piggyback off the last scene, standing in the corner. The character, after he's committed kind of the capital crime with any kind of competitive sport, you know, giving himself an edge that the competition might not necessarily have, he can hear in the back of his head the coach that he had, who we'll say he passed away about 2 or 3 years ago. This was his original fight arena. It's where he sunk all of his financial gain after teaching both the face and the heel everything that he knew about wrestling. So we get that nice plot twist of you and I actually come from a shared background. Our coach, the wise old boxing coach that, you know, was once the top wrestler in the world, his name hangs above the arena, and it's kind of that coming to moment of, now that the heel has gone, he's gone too far for the sake of victory, for the sake of his own personal gain, while literally under the shadow and the eyes of the person that he looked up to most, the father figure that he had as a kid.
I love that. I love that dearly. I want to use that to segue into question 5, which is, what did you have to give up to get where you are? If we came from the same background, if like our coach was the same, partially, probably because it's always on my mind because I live in the city of Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I immediately float to Rocky.
Yes.
And so I float to a very like Mickey-like coach. And I think like what I have given up is the lessons that coach imparted. Like, you know, I think that we see a lot of, like, we've seen a lot of over the years, like, we came up, you know, we came up punching sides of beef and running through like alleyways in big, thick, you know, thick sweaters and knit caps. And like, we came up like in a very kind of grimy space of like a working class sort of like up, like coming up through the ranks. Like, that was our training. And I have given that up to go like very, you know, I am now very much an Apollo Creed, like a dancer and a showboat, and someone that is like very kind of ties into like, I care too much about what the crowd thinks. I'm putting on too much of a show. Like, it's not how we were taught. It's not like what we were taught. And I had to give up that upbringing, give up my relationship to the coach and all that he did for us in order to get where I am and in order to be this beloved hero. Like, I was never going to be that hero if I held on to what I had. And what I had was this very, very like honest, earnest, working class like training and upbringing.
So I'm going to flow right into number 12. What did Face do to force you to cross the point of no return? About 2 weeks before the announcement of the match, all of a sudden these posters are floating around town. There's some images floating around social media where the face had dubbed my character, the heel, the moniker, the Hound. And as a kid, it was kind of a, you know, making fun of, got a kind of droopier face, not aged and ancient, but just kind of, you know, hangs low, kind of pouchy in the cheeks, and then kind of longer in the earlobes. So Hound was kind of a joke and a prod as a kid, and Heel knew that. It was something that our Mickey, our coach, would do to ignite that fire to get underneath me and, you know, force me further. And that's what, you know, it started circulating on social media, kind of in the slandery kind of way. And it's not necessarily the face that was promoting and doing these things specifically. He has an entire marketing engine behind him. But, you know, it was something that was put out there, and the heel took it personally and equated all of those actions, the nicknames, the posters, the social media stuff, to the face specifically.
I adore that. That's fantastic. Which I really want to just segue right into question 13, which is, what does the heel do that can never be forgiven? I think that, like, that ties in very nicely. So here I'm going to be blurring, like, in-ring storytelling and out-of-ring storytelling for a minute, because I think it's going to work well for the story that's being told, which is, I think that, like, the in-ring story, the thing that has never been, that can never be forgiven, is you, like, got me, barred from the athletic association, right? Like, you exposed me, you exposed the, like, deals that I was doing, all very kind of businessy. Like, you exposed crooked contracts that I had, that, like, you, and, like, after tonight, like, on midnight tonight, like, I am banned from the athletic association. I can never go back. And that is why this is, like, people know this is my good, my match, because this is me saying, I have until midnight to get my hands on you. So I'm going to get my hands on you. Backstage, what has happened is I have taken a job that, like, I can't turn down. And, like, I'm just too passionate about it. And, like, I'm really excited about it. But, like, that was the justification for why, like, I am leaving and retiring, but I'm not, like, hurt. I'm not taking a contract somewhere. It just was, like, you have forced my hand to where after tonight I can never wrestle again. So I am going to make sure that, like, I get my hands on you one time before I walk away.
Nice. All right. I'm going to piggyback on that with 10. What is your greatest strength? And I'm just going to, it's a two-parter. One is, it's the tenacity, the determination of never giving up. And then the second is, he just knows how to get under people's skin. For years, again, back to the nickname, the Hound, he's had people get under his skin. So he learned from those around him how to get under other people's skin. And he's a good smack talker. He's a good trash talker in and out of the ring during the press meetups and things like that. So I'm gonna go with those two things there for the strengths.
I like that. I want to go for question number one. What did I put on the line to make this match happen? I think I put my bodily health on the line. I think this is, like, a very hardcore, like, weapons match, because I said, like, I'm not gonna be allowed to do this. Like, after tonight, I'm not gonna do this anymore. This is it. So I'm going out throwing everything that I can at you, and we're gonna settle this once and for all. So I'm putting my health on the line by, like, saying, like, you know, I've got until midnight. We're doing this, and we're pulling out all the stops, because this is going to be an officially sanctioned match. Like, we're doing this. We're throwing out the rule book, and we're going to settle this. Like, we're going to settle this between us, so that when midnight comes and I'm banned from the sport, I don't have to look back.
Nice. Okay. So two, why did FaZe have to put this on the line to make this match? So just, you know, you kind of laid it out there. It's the end of the rope for yourself. And I'm just going to kind of tie into that with you getting ready to move on. The commission, or whoever handles the top-down promotion, they've completely passed me by for just kind of the next spotlight. And they're going to hand your torch off onto another young up-and-comer, another great record. And again, it's just one of those, when your career ends, it kind of puts a stopper to the glitz and glam, the draw to our fight. You know, you're the Superman, I'm the Lex Luthor. Superman has a plethora of other characters to fight, but Lex Luthor technically only has Superman to go after. So
I'm going to go for question six. I have six and seven left. Those are the only two I have left. So I'm going to go for six, which is, what is your gimmick and what are you fighting for? My gimmick is that I am, like, a prize fighter. You know, tying into that idea of, like, I came up in sort of a real fighting background. I think I've segued into being, like, a very over the top picture of like a champ of like a big money fighter, right? Like, you know, I make an entrance with a posse and I'm wearing the little short skirt robe that all the fighters wear. Like, I'm doing a whole thing, but it's all kind of slightly over the top in the way that everything in wrestling is kind of over the top. And like, this is very much, and like, what I am fighting for tonight is to prove that like that was an act. So like, when I made my entrance, there wasn't a crowd, you know, the music and the mock camera flashes weren't going off. Like, I just walked to the ring in the robe and like stood there, and it was very subdued, and it just had this aura of like, oh, all of the glitz and glamour is gone, and for once, like I'm gonna fight on real terms and not like as a performance.
Nice. All right, so I'm gonna go with 9. What is your gimmick and what are you fighting for tonight? And it's you know, on top of everything else, my character is going to reach into his locker as they're getting ready to head out to the stage. He's going to pull over his head it's a wolf skin, a large dog skin. And he does a little bit of face paint just to kind of, you know, add to the menace and intensity. And as he comes out, it's silent, but just somebody's running it sounds like a wolf track where it kind of pans left to right in the stadium. Coming out again, just that silence. There's no music. The crowd is hushed, and there's the face stripped down, ready to go, and then the heel coming out with a wolf skin, just owning that moniker and not letting the face own any of this tonight.
And so my last question is, what is my greatest strength? My greatest strength is, I think the thing that is most in my corner is that everyone has underestimated me. For so long I've been in the character of like the big over the top like champion role, that people forget that I got here the same way that you did. Like, people forget that we entered the business the same way. We like rose up in the promotion the same way, and you know, our paths went in different directions, but like, we started out in the same spot. And so my greatest strength is that this environment, this style of match, this aura that the match has between us is not foreign to me. That this is still inside of me. This has always been part of who I am, and I can finally let it out and let loose with it tonight of all nights.
That's awesome. So then my last question is, what is the heel's hidden weakness? And it is a shoulder injury that happened a few years ago in one of our first prize fights against each other. Went down the wrong way and fought out the rest of the match, even though you had extended an olive branch to, you know, hey, let's, you know, call it, an injury is an injury, and let's come at this at a different time once you're healed. And I turned it down, fought the rest of the fight, still lost. And, you know, to this day, it makes a couple of the punches a little weak.
So technically the question is, what is the face's hidden weakness? Oh. But I like that answer a lot. And I just want to let it, I want to say that it's also like, that is also true. Cause that is a great moment. I think that is emblematic of our rivalry, right? Is that like, I was willing to be like, hey, like if you're hurt, like you're hurt, like we can drop this. And you saying no way, like that is a good moment. So that is our questions. After all questions have been answered, we have three questions that either of us can answer, and we're going to talk these through together and kind of come to those questions are: what moment will people remember long after the match ends? Who wins the match at the end of the night, and what comes next for both competitors?
Okay.
So who wins the match?
You know, just again, that big name hanging up over the stadium. I personally feel the heel throws it. Even after pumping himself full of whatever it is he pumps himself full of, maybe he goes down in, you know, second or third round and he just intentionally just doesn't get back up.
I think there's a beautiful moment. They're one of my absolute favorite moments in pro wrestling. I'm gonna geek out for a quick second. There's a moment in like a match that very much like this, like the big match, you know, where one person can't get back up. And basically, like, there's a moment, you often see it, where like the wrestler will be like on his knees and he'll just start like slapping his neck, or like kind of being like, you know, one more. Mm-hmm. And for lack of a better way to describe it, it is that person saying like, finish me off, like take the shot, like end it, like it's over, but you have to be the one to end it. And I think like that moment has a real power if it's the heel like being like, I'm not being like, hey, you know, take your goodbye, like, right. You know, the heel has won in the end, but like letting, having the face take, you know, and it kind of echoes that thing from earlier where like, when you were hurt before, I said, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not gonna put you down. Like, it was very much a moment of like, this is your only chance to like put me down,
right?
So I have to like hit you with a kendo stick or something, just like end it and like knock you out, because it's the only way that this match is going to end. And if I don't end this in 10 minutes, I never get that rest.
And then it also kind of plays to, and I was trying to drill home with the heel, that he wasn't going to let the face have this. And by the heel, mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, clutching his shoulder, they both know he's got the injury, and then not getting back up. The face publicly has earned that victory, but the face also knows that the heel can get back up if there's another round in him. Yeah.
Yep. Yes. I like that. I really, really like that. So what comes next for both competitors? I think I have to walk away. I think that, like, backstage, I think, like I said, backstage, I think this is a moment of, like, this chapter of my life is just over. Mm-hmm. I had the run, and I had the run, I had the accolades, and I'm moving on to something else. And like, I think this actually, like, I think this is the sort of goodbye that fans never really never really take as a goodbye. And there's always that question of, is he going to come back?
Right.
Like, is he going to, and he might one day, I don't know, but it's exactly the sort of goodbye where people go, I don't know. You know, where like a plot point will happen. Somebody will make an open challenge and you know, at least one fan in the crowd's like, gonna be the prize fighter. There he is. He's gonna show up, and then he doesn't. But like, it's still there in the back of your mind. Like, there's still that moment where you're like, I think maybe.
Right, right. So then I think for the heel, we get a nice smash cut to black with a 6 months, 9 months later, and we have him in front of a small dirty glass window building with the Hounds Wrestling Studio, and inside are a bunch of young, they look like misfits. You know, one kid's got holes in his shoes and socks or whatever have you. And, you know, maybe it's a life partner, a friend. They, you know, they come over and, you know, you know, Mickey would be proud, kind of a moment.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a whole lot.
So he kind of gets his resolution is, you know, being able to teach the next generation what not to do, not to be him, and carry on Mickey's legacy, not his own.
I love that. So the last question, what moment will people remember long after the match ends?
Mm.
I think I have an answer.
All right, let's hear it.
I think it's the prize fighter's entrance. I think it's both of our entrances.
Okay.
I think that like, there's a lot of moments that people will talk about. Like, this is a very violent, bloody, like, you know, heavy match, but I think there's also that moment where, you know, for all the glitz and glamour, like the prize fighter who had been sort of this ace figure for so long just sort of enters with no fanfare. The Hound comes in wearing a hound skin. Like, people will describe being in the crowd and seeing us make our entrance and going, oh no, they're both gonna murder each other,
right?
Like, there is an unspoken violence in our entrances that I think, like, I want to say, just because, you know, this is our story and we can dictate things, I think we do live up to it. I think that we put on just the most brutal match that has ever been put on. But I think fans in that moment, like, watched us enter and were like, oh, they're going to kill each other. Oh, somebody in this ring is going to die. And I think, like, that moment just has a power to it.
That's awesome. That was incredible. That was exactly 30 minutes, almost to the dot. And that was a Rocky movie. That was a coming of age tale. That was amazing. And it was just
that's big fight feel. That's why I love this 20 game.
20 questions, and it's really cool because I mean, just even looking at the way the questions read, you kind of come to that same like, oh shit, kind of a feeling.
Yeah, and that's really what the game itself is like going for is like that's a very real moment in pro wrestling is when two like hyper longtime rivals right. like the bell rings. The very specific moment that I want to capture with that game that I think it does a great job of like portraying is you'll see it a lot in like matches that have a ton of history is when the bell will ring and no one will move.
Right, right.
And they'll just stand there and like, and the crowd like will be hushed, will like be cheering and then go hush.
And everyone's
and then cheer even louder. Yeah. And like that, yeah. That's the moment that I wanted.
Well,
and I feel like it hits.
It truly does. And it's really cool because, you know, I've always had some reservations about just diving into really any kind of creative process with anyone outside mm-hmm. of a familiar group. But it's almost like, you know, one party and the systems that you utilize for it kind of strip away any kind of, I don't want to say awkwardness. Awkwardness is a good word mm-hmm. that can arise. And again, you know, speaking back to the way that you engineer the entire system, the questions, you know, the lines and the veils. That you mentioned, it's really cool because then you can just you get to the gut, the core emotional feeling that everybody loves about tabletop RPGs.
And I think that's what like that to me is what is like the that to me is what a good two player or like small group game does is it gives you the tools to enter that space because I think that like even with somebody that you know well. Playing with one person can be like a weird experience. Mm-hmm. And the analogy that I always use or the thing that I always point out is, you know, if you stop and think about how often you, maybe not you specifically, right. because you run an interview podcast, but like if you think about like in your given day outside of podcasting, like the amount of times that you talk to one person for half an hour and a half, 2 hours. Right. There aren't a ton, and they tend to all be very emotional moments, you know, like job interviews or dates with a significant other right. or meetings with your boss. Like they tend to be like very big moments. And so, you know, this space that we are in right now, like it is emotionally loaded and having that presence. Like having a game that kind of gives you tools to explore that space and does it well, I think is an incredibly powerful thing because it lets you kind of it gives you the tools to navigate that space and then uses that feeling, that intimacy to real effect.
Right.
Like I think this game is a good example of like we are telling a story of like a moment that is shared between two people and we are fleshing that story out to really like make it that really powerful moment. Partially because you and I are having a moment, just the two of us telling a story and doing something emotionally vulnerable together. So like it is using that space and like with very specific questions to like push you and push into that emotional experience.
That's incredible. That was, bar none, when it got to the point where I realized the character's motivations, I realized what was on the line,
mm-hmm.
like I started getting chills. Like I was pulling.
It's great. Yeah, it's dope. I love this game.
It's so awesome. So we're already, you know, pushing past the record times that I try to stick to. So I really don't have any other questions. Do you have anything else that you would like to talk about when it comes to I am drawing a blank. My mind is in that ring still.
I get it. No, I get it. There's a reason that I end my episodes when I'm done the game is because I'm like, well, I'm done. I did it. We're done.
Perfect. So is there anything else you'd like to talk about or plug?
You can find me on Twitter at Party of One Pod. That's where I share most of my game design and podcasting and all that kind of stuff. I am Twitter trash. It's not a good quality that I have, but it's certainly a quality. You can also go to jeffsformer.com for links to all of the podcasts that I produce, the games that I create, all of that good stuff. And jeffstormer.itch.io is where you can find the games that I produce. And then partyofonepodcast.com is where you can find Party of One. There's tools on the website for helping you find the best episode to dive into, because it's all one-shot games, so there's probably an episode that is really, really up your alley. If you enjoyed this, the game that we played, there is an episode of Big Fight Feel on Party of One that I think is phenomenally good. So go to Party of One, partyofonepodcast.com, and find your perfect episode.
That is fantastic. Jeff, again, thank you so much. I know it's been kind of one hurdle after another with this, but I'm...
When is podcasting?
Exactly. But it was worth the wait. Like, truly, genuinely, sure. I need to go jump on a call with my brother and think out about this for a couple minutes. But thank you again so much for coming on the show, and I look forward to catching more of your work as it moves through.
Hell yeah.
Alrighty, you have a great day.
You as well.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Bardic Babble. Bardic Babble is a part of the Bard Podcast Network's family of shows. You can find Bardic Babble and all of our other shows at thebardpodcast.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe for updates on new episodes. We can't wait to share the next story with you.